Welcome to Culture Matters, a podcast exploring the intersection of faith and culture. Hey guys, welcome back. We are the Tuesday after Easter, literally. So when you're listening to this, we recorded it this morning, so you're welcome. But I am here with my friend, Tamarcus, and it's so good to see your face.
Likewise.
The listeners, they can't tell, but you have a very cool Bass Pro Shop hat on. That's one of my favorite hats of yours.
I've kind of coined it as it's my hat.
Yeah, it is. It's like a tie hat. I'm like, that's Ty's hat. If even I saw another guy with that hat, I'd be like, where'd you get that? That's Ty's.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I like that. That means it's working.
Yeah. Okay, so Easter. How are we feeling? How are we doing? You didn't preach.
I did not preach. Nope. I got to sit under great preaching. Charles Wilson, shout out. It was great. And yeah, it was a good Easter. It rained in the morning.
Yeah.
And there was mention of rain in the sermon, so it was fitting. But then we walked out, it was sunny and beautiful.
Yeah.
It was just like, it was like God was complimenting the sermon with the elements. Mm. It was great.
Yeah. It rained on Saturday here, so we're a little ahead of you. We're in Texas. Mm. But that was kind of nice because that's like, you know, it's gloomy Saturday, you know?
Yeah.
You're kind of, I'm contemplating like he's in the grave, quote, quote, you know, and what would that be like? And I was thinking about, just what that day probably was, very sad. And then it was just moody and cloudy. And then Easter was like the perfect day. Weather, it could not have been better. But yeah, services were great. I was thinking about, you know, in my line of work, such a way that we go like Easter is like the Super Bowl, which I don't love that metaphor, but I understand what they're doing. Or even like, it's just a really big day, right? It's like the biggest day of the year. You add services, there's always a lot. And the reality of it is, you know, an excessive number of people show up on Easter who maybe haven't been to church in a couple years, maybe have never been to church, maybe they came with their family. It is definitely a thing. And, you know, I kind of see both sides. Like, there's a part of me that's like, should we just treat every Sunday like Easter with the amount of preparation and the amount of thought that goes into? I mean, we were thinking like every line of lyrics, you know, like every everything had thought behind it. Yeah. So I was reflecting kind of on, from a production worship standpoint, how much we really like planned for this one Sunday. And I was like, gosh, it's not sustainable probably, but could we do this every week? Because the results are, I think there's fruit there when you prepare that well, because you can actually rest in it a little better because things were so prepared. At least that's what I felt. And so, I don't know. Those are kind of my random Tuesday afterthoughts, and I'll probably have different ones next Tuesday. But all in all, Easter was great. And it did get me thinking, because you and I have had this conversation before about how we spend, you know, the 40 days prior to Easter in a Lent season and building up to Good Friday, which is such a somber service. Not everybody does Good Friday, but for us, we do. Do you guys do one? Do you do a Good Friday thing?
We didn't do a Good Friday service, but we did get to go and help a church plant prepare for their Easter Sunday on Good Friday. So we drove down.
We
did like a big community bash, invited people out to come worship so they knew where they were.
Oh, that's
cool. Shout out to Renewal Church in Greensboro. And so, yeah, it was a good time.
I love that. Well, citizens, we, you know, have a Good Friday service, and it's a very like, it's based on the Tenebre, which I'm probably pronouncing the Greek wrong. I don't know. But that means the word means like to get darker. So the service is meant to get to complete darkness at the end. And so we go through the seven sayings, the last sayings of Jesus, and sing some songs and leave out all the parts in the songs that talk about resurrection. Which is fun when you're planning songs, because you're like, oh, don't do that verse because that talks about the resurrection.
Yeah.
And just to really like it is such a good reminder and makes Easter feel a certain way to me to spend a little time in
service.
That. Yeah. We missed you. But anyway.
Yeah. No, to your earlier thoughts you were talking about, I empathize with that. I remember growing up, I grew up in a non-denominational church, so it wasn't you know, I say it wasn't a more traditional liturgical church, although, you know, newsflash, every church has its liturgies. So there's just that. But you know what I mean. But I mean, you know, Easter Sunday, you know, everyone's dressed to the nines. You put your suits on.
Yeah.
You know, you get your, you know, you got to get right. And I remember as a teenager, I got to a point, you know, that point where you're like taking your walk seriously, but you like know just enough to be dangerous.
Ooh, yeah.
You're mm-hmm. a little prideful mm-hmm. and all that. So I decided I was going to boycott the Easter festivities. I wore like shorts and like a
Uh-oh.
Dingy like Fruit of the Loom white T-shirt that said, "This is my Easter shirt."
How about your mama did not like that?
She was like, "Yeah, boy, what you doing?" Everybody was like, "What is going on?" And I was like, "It's not about what you wear. It's about Jesus."
Right. Right,
you
right,
know,
right,
I was making this big statement. And that was cool or whatnot. Probably not. But I think where I've come, even to your point of like the excellence every Sunday, and I think there is something to that, right? We wanna give God our best every time. And whatever we do, right, we do unto the Lord. And, you know, to use a different example, my wife, she's from New Orleans. She makes the best gumbo
mm-hmm.
I've ever had.
Can't confirm.
If you're listening and you're like, "Man, I make good gumbo," I bet you do. But my wife's gumbo is probably better. And she only makes it like twice a year.
Yeah.
She'll make it for Christmas, sometimes Thanksgiving.
Uh-huh.
And it's, you know, it takes a couple days. She works on it for a couple days.
Yeah.
And she cooks
mm-hmm.
all the time. You know, she cooked mm-hmm. yesterday. We had dinner. It was great. Delicious. But gumbo is like for these special occasions.
Mm-hmm.
And I've started to realize, like, there's something about not just Easter, but any sort of like celebration or holiday or observance that like carries with it this, like, you know, we might do some variation of this. You know, we eat all the time, we'll get together. But like for this occasion, like there's mm-hmm. something special about. And so I think Easter does that. Like, there's a reason why it's like you could go to church any Sunday for your, you know, for your grandparents, for your mom, whatever. But there's something about Easter that even that the kid, you know, I hear it all the time in families, like, you know, they never go to church, but like he'll go with me on Easter.
Yeah.
You know, I don't really do the church thing, but like, you know, I feel like you're supposed to go on Easter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it speaks to the power of liturgy and celebration and culture and what it instills. And in that vein, it is like, I think over time, as I've grown from those teenage rebellion ways of like leaning into the, yeah, there is something special about mm-hmm. this moment. And so we give a little more something when we're thinking about the service. We're thinking more intentionally about like, man, there's people who are coming who don't normally come, but they're going to be here today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, let's anticipate that. And I would even say some of the stuff you brought up, I think, is part of the result of that, of like, man, every Sunday I should anticipate, like, there's people that are coming who aren't already bought into this thing. Like, how could I be thinking more about that? Mm-hmm. And I think part of the reality of life is just as we go through the motions, there are certain things that slip through the cracks. And what these moments of celebration and observance do is they bring to the forefront things that maybe are forgotten in a way that not only heightens our attention on that day, but if they work accordingly, mm-hmm. they heighten our attention for the days to come of like, oh, yeah, like I need to think about this. And so I think in that regard, it's like, man, that's Easter working in the best way. And yeah, I think we gotta think more about that.
If I remember right, you love a slow morning, don't you?
I love a slow morning. I love being under blankets with a hot cup of coffee and a book.
Oh, yeah. You know, Cozy Earth is a sponsor. We've talked about them before.
Yes.
And I'm a big fan of, like, all of their stuff. The robe is so nice. I sent one to my mom. Did you send one to your mom?
I did.
She loved it.
Mm-hmm.
I got their jogger set, and clocks. You need to get these for your friends and family because they're so wonderful. It feels like super soft material, comfy, but it's also like cute. The clogs too, they don't look like house slippers. Like they can be an everyday kind of casual wear. So on my slow mornings, which is my favorite, I'll just, you know, enjoy the coffee, enjoy the book. And then like I need to go run errands and I can just go in my jogger set.
That sounds amazing.
It's awesome.
This spring, give yourself the kind of comfort that lives with you all day. Head to CozyEarth.com and use the code CULTURE for an exclusive 20% off. And if you see a post-purchase survey, mention that you heard about Cozy Earth right here on Culture Matters.
That's so good. Okay, so that's helpful. So the gist of what we were going to talk about was this idea of feasting and fasting. Mm-hmm. And we had a conversation, you and I had this conversation probably like 2 years ago, probably after Easter, which like there's this whole season. So the season of Lent leading up to Easter, and then there's a season of, what do they call it? Jubilee?
Make Easter tide. Yep.
Easter tide. And it's like the 40 days
after. Yeah, I think some different traditions have different ways of describing it. But Easter tide, I think, is the most common, leading up to Pentecost.
Up to Pentecost. And so, you know, a lot of the non-denominational, I mean, even my flavor of church, my ice cream flavor of church, it's like we kind of pick and choose some of the calendar stuff that we stick to. And then, you know, like, so we don't usually do Pentecost, but I know some churches that really go big on that and do a very, they make something out of that, which is also cool. But what you're saying, what I'm hearing you say is like, okay, so special occasions highlight something that helps reframe you. It's almost like a little redirection that you need, you know, because the reality is we're human and we can't sustain a level of faithfulness all the time because in our sinfulness, you know. And so I think maybe we talk about that for a second, because it's like the idea that you get these little signposts, maybe that's a way of saying, like these little road signs that are like, hey, you should turn here. And so Easter can be that. Christmas Eve can be that. If your church does Pentecost, it could be that. And those things are helpful because they kind of like, they just reframe you. I mean, you could even make the argument that that's what Sunday is for in a week.
Yes.
Or even like, that's what prayer time and like silent time or however you do disciplines in the morning on a day, you know, or maybe even like every hour you need something. I've had seasons where every hour I probably need a little, I need to read a Bible verse every hour just to keep my mind from drifting too far. And so, yeah, there's something about the redirection that I think is interesting. And I really like the way you said that.
Yeah. And that's because the reality is like people haven't changed that much.
Yeah.
We are forgetful.
Yeah.
And I think the same way when God gave, you know, the Israelites these different festivals and things to observe, it was always to remind them. Mm-hmm. And so much of even when we look at the New Testament writings, you know, I wanted to write these things to you so that you would remember.
Yeah.
And then so remembering, you'd be called up to these moments. And so we incorporate all sorts of little moments, rather it be, like you say, a Sunday, rather it be times of devotion where we break in the middle of the day. And, you know, part of that conversation we had initially, I was thinking back to like why it came up. And it, like I said, I didn't grow up in a liturgical background. And so out of my ignorance, I remember just asking after one Easter, I was like, man, we spent 40 days observing Lent and then Easter comes and it's like, you know, it's our Super Bowl. I'm going to use that that term. Yeah. And then it's like, and then it's just nothing. Like, that feels like an imbalance. And then I started looking it up and I was like, oh, there's actually more to it. And I was thinking about why, I can't remember exactly then why I was processing, like, why don't we do that? Mm. And I was like, maybe it's because, you know, we're constantly in like a mode of feasting, that it's just like the fasting element is inviting us into something that's more forgotten.
Yeah.
And maybe there could be a case for that. I would argue, at least at this moment, if someone were to ask me why I thought observing this time after Easter up to Pentecost would be equally as important, it's because I think we live in a time that is very, as a community, people are very discouraged. People are afraid. People are we're caught up in a number of different stories. And part of what this season and what this time would invite us to do is to remember what story we're a part of. James K. Smith, I'm sure we've mentioned his book a number of times on the show. Because it, I mean, it's shaped a lot of the way I think. What you are, what you love. And he has a chapter in it where he talks about that. What story are you operating within? Mm. And there's something about the way we celebrate and observe certain, you know, certain patterns. It actually helps shape our culture. It tells us what's important. It shapes our character. And so what I would argue part of what's good about a Easter, not just day, but even this season, Easter tide, is imagine 40 days now of us getting to intentionally reflect on, enjoy having dinner with, you know, different people within our faith community, sharing stories with our children about Jesus getting out of the grave, him walking on earth with disciples. They thought that it was the worst weekend of their lives, and it turned out to be the most exciting, pinnacle shifting moment in all of history. And just to remember that that's the story we're caught up in. You know, we talked about, you asked me about Good Friday and when we got to go partner with Renewal Church. And I remember just thinking while we were out there, you know, in the midst of so many different things going on, I'm just seeing this community of folks, you know, I don't live in North Carolina, but here I am, and we're serving and we're eating and people are excited and, you know, their kids are making these little, what you want to call it, crafts with donuts of like the tomb being rolled away. And it just, it was just this reminder of like, man, like God's, like he's working.
Stone was a donut hole? I mean.
You know what I'm saying? Come on.
I think some 4-year-olds could get behind that. Yeah, that's good. I like that.
They were down. They were bought in.
Yeah.
And, but there was just something about that. It reoriented me from like the story that is the news feed, the doom scroll of like,
reorienting.
Oh, like God is, God is breaking into the world. And regardless of whether it's, you know, strictly holding to a church calendar or just thinking about how we are, what we are observing or how we take intentional time to set aside and remember these things, I think our human hearts do well to have these intentional moments of reorientation. Yeah.
Okay, I got a book reference. Okay. Because I read this when it came out, which was like 10 years ago. And it's a friend of mine, but it's Barry Jones, used to be a professor at DTS. He's a pastor at another church. And anyway, the book's called Dwell. He's got a chapter called Table Manners, which is about feasting and fasting. Mm. And he talks about both. But what I love is this, like the framework of the book as a whole is that you're dwelling with God. You're spending life with God for the world. So there is an active abiding, but there's also an active participation. And that the story of God is one that is like rebuilding the shalom that was broken in the garden. So he kind of goes through Revelation and goes back to Genesis and how, you know, God's plan is to rebuild his world as he intended it. And so we're a part of that. And then we're also like invited into it. Anyway, but he talks about feasting as a defiant practice because these are all like practical things, prayer. I'm totally blanking on the others. The disciplines, basically, prayer, feasting, fasting, all of those things too, that those are things that Christians do communally. Worship is one. And those are defiant practices to help battle the darkness of the world, right? And so anyways, he's talking about feasting. And I love this part. I got to find it real quick. It's this part where he's talking about, so feasting in a Christian sense as a spiritual discipline, that like, you know, everyday meals obviously are important. They have their own spiritual thing. Like he makes a side point, but doesn't really dig into it. Like you do need to like consider all meals an important part of like praying and gratitude and all of those things. But that there, it doesn't have to be a fancy meal. That's not the point of a feast, but there is an act of like the hospitality aspect, that it's like a meal where you're gathering guests around a table, and that something about that is helping get a glimpse of the banquet of the kingdom. That's the word to use. And so those meals where we get a little foretaste of shalom. And so he references Michael Frost says this thing about thin places. And so the Celts speak of thin places where the fabric that separates heaven and earth is so thin it becomes almost translucent, and one is able to encounter the joy and peace of heaven. In the Celtic tradition, such places give us an opening into the magnificence and wonder of the world to come. To them, a thin place is where the veil that separates heaven and earth is lifted, and one is able to receive a glimpse of the glory of God. And so Barry's like, for me, the veil is thin when I'm seated at a table with good food and good friends.
Yeah.
And I just love the simplicity of that, to think like, oh, the gathering moment, the Thanksgivings, the Christmases, the Easters, the, you know, those big meal moments where you gather with a lot of your loved ones, that is like, there is a way of thinning the veil that is between you and God. Like, there's an abiding there. And it made me think, even like, Jesus did that right before he goes and dies for all the world, that he gathers and has a meal with his friends. And there's sacred things that happen in that time, in the Last Supper. So anyway, it got me thinking a lot about feasting.
I was going to bring that up. Yes, it's because there's so many things with that moment, right? I mean, obviously, Jesus is getting ready to reorient the, you know, actually the first time God institutes something for the people to celebrate is Passover. And to remember him bringing them out of Egypt, Jesus is now getting ready to reorient that around himself. Yeah. And we continue to acknowledge it through communion.
Yes.
And I think from a human perspective of he knows, I'm about to be betrayed, I'm going to get arrested, I'm going to suffer, you know, all these things are about to come. And it's like, okay, what are you going to do before all of that happens?
Yeah.
And he's like, hey guys, I want you to go find this guy. I love the way it even happened. Like, go find this guy, like random guy, tell him, you know, the master needs a space. He's going to have this room at the top of his house, and it's this lavish space. We're going to get together and we're going to eat a meal and enjoy time. And there's like,
I'm going to wash your feet.
I'm going to wash your feet. Yeah. It's like,
I'm going to break bread. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and there are elements of it of like, they've gotten together and they've eaten and done, but there was something about this moment.
That
is special. And he wanted to mark like something unique is happening.
Yeah.
And that was done around the table in this moment of celebration. And yeah, it's just, there is, we need those moments as
we do. Yes.
As people. And I would, and then here's another argument I'd give to that of, we do that with other things.
Ooh.
I think this is maybe where it gets difficult sometimes. I was thinking about like why is celebrating sometimes hard in, you know, our tradition of Christianity?
Church.
And I think sometimes it's like our association with it becomes marred by so many other things.
Mm.
And I think there is something to a Christian celebration that is revolved around things of the faith that is being done, you know, in good spirit and in good faith, that actually teaches us how to celebrate. It is pointed towards the right ends, and it's reshaping values. So we've got other cultural cues that tell us what's important, and they have their own liturgies, right? So we use the phrase, you know, the Christian Super Bowl. The Super Bowl has its liturgies.
Sure does.
And there are all sorts of things that come with it. And that's, you know, it's a whole thing within itself. But you could name a number of different celebrations or observances that we do, rather it's like broadly as a community, or even just if we sat down and talked about our own habits of, man, what do I, you know, I remember somebody asked me recently, you know, where in the Bible does it tell us that we have to start our day reading the Bible? And like having quiet time. Like, why does it have to be the first thing we do in the morning? And like, there's nowhere in the Bible that says the first thing you have to do in the morning is. And human beings are creatures of habit. And I would just go to say, I bet you're a different kind of person throughout the day if for a month straight, the first thing you did when you woke up was look at your phone and scroll.
Mm.
And then if you took another month and the first thing you did every time you woke up was read mm-hmm. the scriptures and pray and acknowledge the Lord, I bet the outcome would be different because we're shaped mm-hmm.
yep.
by the things that we do. And so I'm like, there's a level there that, like, even when we walk into the, I love what he talks about, like, these thin spaces of thinking about, like, how can I create patterns and rhythms in my life that cultivate or make room for thin spaces?
Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
That aren't expanding the gap and making yep. it feel more distant. But it's like, how can I be intentional about creating spaces that can be thin, not just for me, but also for those in my community, where you hear people say stuff like, man, like, you know, I think about those moments when anytime someone says, man, like, in heaven, it could be like this, like, all the time. Or like, do you think this would be what heaven's like? Like, that it even takes your mind to, like, this is different. And I know maybe it's just a moment or whatever, but I think there's real...
It's rehearsal for heaven.
It's rehearsal. It's real power.
And it's like anyone who's done anything performative, you know, singing, music, theater, there's even sports is performative. So it's like you practice and you rehearse. And rehearsing and practicing is how you get better. If you don't, you know, if you don't do those things and you're like, I'm just going to show up on the day and we're going to see what happens, you're going to do horrible. And no one wants to be in that position because then it's like, well, that was embarrassing. And so, yeah, it's like rehearsal. It's like Easter is just this beautiful thing of rehearsing what heaven's going to be. It's inviting people into a story that they may not know. And it's also inviting yourself into this reminder, you know, because if you've been a believer for a long time, you know. So I had this thought when you were talking a second ago. I remember when I was a kid, we would get I even remember talking about it. Like as a teenager, I'm like, you get the camp high.
Yes.
So you leave camp.
Yes. Yes. I'm glad
and
you
are like vibing. Mm-hmm. So you're in the feast. You're leaving the feast, whatever it is, camp. Even Sunday, I think, has its own kind of like, I was with God's people today. It was a great day. And then what do you do to maintain that? Or is it unrealistic to even to imagine that the feasting mentality, the camp high, is going to stay?
I think it's I'm glad you brought that up. Because I that was another one of those moments where it's like, I remember taking kids to camp and people telling them like, oh, you know, it's just people, they'll come back and they're jazzed and they're like, they'll say, it's just the camp high.
Right.
It'll like, almost
it'll
to
fade.
Like this to a disdain. Yep.
Uh-huh.
And man, I think there's a real thing that happens to camp. It happens at camp when you come back and you feel rejuvenated. You've just taken this intentional time. You know, I'm thinking youth ministry. So I'm like, students have taken a week, 2 weeks, a summer, whatever, to get away from the ordinary things of life. They're away from their devices or whatever, and they're just worshiping the Lord, being discipled, being poured into, praise the Lord. And yeah, they're going to come back with this level of rigor. And we want that. And I think rather than saying it's just the camp high, or rather than saying like, how do you feel like that all the time? Because I think the reality of the already but not yet is that is our constant experience until Jesus comes back.
That's good.
Moses walking up to the mountaintop and his face shining and then coming down. And after a while it fades.
That's it.
Right. Paul literally borrows that image of like, we're in this space, but one day we'll see with unveiled face and the shine won't go away.
Yeah.
And that is actually the narrative of the camp is for them to come back and be like, hey, if anything, preparing them like, hey, there might come a time in a couple of days.
Yeah.
Where like you don't, whatever. And there are ways that we need to navigate that and walk through it. But one day, it'll be like that forever, but even better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even better. Like that there was, like the way you were able, you were just surrounded by people who love the Lord. And there was just this time of where, and you felt it was a thin space.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're entering back into a thick space and you're fighting for those thin spaces.
That's it.
But I don't want to fight for the thin space if I never know what it's like.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not, like, when I go to camp and I get to see, like, oh, this can really, like, I remember seeing teenage, you know, folks that were a little older than me who are serious about walking with the Lord. And there's so many people, and they're from all across the country and the world. Mm. And my imagination of what is possible and what God is doing in the world has been expanded. So now when I go back, even where I don't see it, it's like, yeah, but I remember that those moments. And it has a way, even as it fades, it has a way of being able to imbue the ordinary, right? Now you get back to the church calendar, the ordinary time.
Ordinary time, yeah.
Right? Between Pentecost all the way till you get back to Advent.
Mm-hmm.
You're living in between these two realities. And so, and you then feel the reality of, oh, this is the story that I'm in. Like, Jesus has come. He has really died and resurrected from the grave. He walked the earth. He's ascended. We've been given the Spirit. And I'm waiting until his second advent. And I'm holding on to these two realities mm-hmm. and these celebrations mm-hmm. to carry me through the ordinary time. And I know that there's going to be times where I'm going to feel lower. I need to be reminded of the joys. There's going to be some times where I'm going to be experiencing a false sense of happiness and joy and distraction and things that aren't oriented around the story of the kingdom.
Yeah.
And I need those seasons of fasting and of Lent and of contrition to remind me of my brokenness, of the brokenness around me. And we're constantly needing reorientation on all fronts, but we need it on both sides. And I think that was part of what I was feeling even in my own heart and discipleship of, like,
it's good.
Hey, I need to be tuned to see my sin and to see the weight of the world. And I think maybe even now, culturally, we're in a space where we're feeling that, and people may be feeling that, and it feels natural and good to sit in that more and more and more. And I think what a more well-rounded discipleship in the scriptures would also invite us to do is say, hey, we need to be oriented to remember where joy lies, where hope lies, to be lifted up and be reminded of what story we're a part of. They're like, yes, this world is broken and things are passing away and something real is crashing in, has crashed in, and has changed the trajectory of everything. Jesus is risen. He's sitting on the throne. He is reigning and ruling. And, like, I need to be lifted by that part of the story as well.
Yeah.
So that I don't lose sight of ultimately what he has us to do while we're still here.
So good. I'm going to quote Barry again.
Come on.
Because I got the book. So on the flip side of the feasting, he talks about fasting. He talks about it throughout, like, the Old Testament. You see examples of God's people fasting. They're all examples of these, like, grievous times. He says, like, it's a response to a grievous sacred moment. Mm-hmm. And then he says this. He's like, so when we encounter the brokenness of the world, we face two very different temptations. One, we become so overwhelmed, we just want to look away. We'd rather continue to walk through life as if nothing was wrong. And then there's a second temptation that we can face of, like, I can fix this. I can handle this. I can do something with this. You know, Nehemiah, for example, doesn't give in to either temptation. When I heard these things, this is Nehemiah 1:4. When I heard these things, I sat down and wept. For some days I mourned and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. And Barry just says, like, the reality is we must avoid the temptation to look away or the temptation to think naively that we can handle it in our own strength. We need to look intently at reality, to grieve over it, to fast and pray before the God of heaven. Such fasting is a defiant act protesting against the vandalism of shalom that nurtures and sustains life with God for the world. And it's like, it's what you just said. I mean, it's written in a book, so it's, like, nicely worded. But it's what you just said, too, of you have to have both. You have to have the feast to remind you of what you're looking forward to. You have to have the fast to remind you that you can't do it all and you need God. And somehow with the both, I love that you were, like, the visual of, you know, it's ups and downs, it's mountains and valleys. And somewhere between the two, you know, is where you're just kind of getting through life and practicing until, you know, the full kingdom is brought to earth.
Yes.
By God.
Yep.
Thankfully, yeah. It's not on our shoulders. Like, I'm just like, you know, you hear a lot. It's kind of Christianese to be like, Maranatha, you know, Jesus come. And you hear it a lot in church. And that probably feels really weird if you didn't grow up in church or you haven't thought about what that means. But it's like, we really are praying for, we're praying for people to find Jesus in this life, but we're praying for him to come back. It's like we're praying so often for him to come back because we want the world to be, we want shalom to be brought back to the world. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's something to that. And feasting and fasting does that.
It does that. Yep. And maybe just, and as we close, to somebody who, you know, they struggle with all those different pieces, is I think part of the invitation is understanding that it feels disruptive because it's supposed to be, right? So maybe,
you know, we
talk about it all the time during Advent. Sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, this time of joy and cheer in your personal life doesn't feel joyous and cheerful.
Yeah.
And it feels fake to lean into it. But the reality is, leaning into it is the invitation to do, you know, it's what we sing in Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing. Mm. Tune my heart
to
sing
heart.
Your praise. All of these are mechanisms to tune my heart. The heart gets out of tune because life is life. And these moments of celebration are set not according to where our heart is, but they're set in order for us to have these markers where we get to reorient our heart.
So
we get to help cultivate and teach our heart how to see the like you said, the darkness in the world appropriately, the darkness that's in us appropriately, but also to see the light that is to come and the light that has already come and is operable in us and in the world as we abide in Christ and fulfill his mission and love one another and do all those things. So, yep, we can lean into.
Yeah.
Christian Super Bowl.
Yeah. Okay. I still don't love the metaphor.
I know.
I get the concept.
Something
else. It is so much more than that. But anyway.
It's so much more. Yeah.
Embrace. It's better. Embracing the celebration. It's way better than the Super Bowl. Embracing the celebration of the Christian story. Yeah. This episode is produced by me, with editing and support from The Good Podcast Company. As always, check the show notes for resources and ways to connect. We'll link a couple books probably today, and thank you for listening.